One more set.
One more set?
Yeah.
One set. Okay.
Thank you. So my talk is on the articulation between genders and the inflectional places of Nancy. Jola Foni, an Atlantic language from the Bach branch, and in the second part of the talk I will insist on the phenomenon which I call the context-free views of places, which in my opinion provides very strong additional arguments to be very careful with terminology and definitions if one doesn't want to fall into confusion. So, typologically, the dual phony system, the articulation between genders and inflectional places nouns in dual phony is not particularly remarkable. You have the usual complications. The terminology I would use is not 100% identical to that used in the Gundermann and Fieber paper, but I completely agree that consistent description of such systems can only be achieved if one accepts that the notions of genders based on agreement properties of nouns and the inflectional classes of nouns must be carefully distinguished if one wants to give a proper account of the way they articulate in individual languages. As regards terminology, when speaking of nouns, I try to never use the term class alone, but to always specify either agreement classes or inflectional classes. Okay, and when I use the term class without any further specification, I will refer to the inflectional paradigms of nominals and pronouns. So, class without any further specification in the terminology I will use refers to an inflectional feature, characteristics of nominals and pronouns, whose definition is that if in you have the definition on the page 3 of the handout, in a noun plus modifier construction, if the modifier is inflected for class, it is the head noun that determines the value of the feature class expressed by the modifier, and when a word inflected for class is used pronominally in reference to an antecedent present in the context, it's the noun form in the role of antecedent that determines the value of the feature class expressed by the pronoun. Crucially, this definition of class as an inflectional feature of a nominal and pronoun refers implicitly to the involvement of this inflectional category in agreement with nouns as an essential property, but nevertheless does not imply that the value taken by the feature class should always refer to a controller, and it doesn't exclude either that perhaps among the values that constitute the class paradigm of nominals and pronouns in a given language, there may be some values that are never involved in agreement with nouns. And this is crucial to be able to describe without the phenomenon I will try to analyze in the second part of my talk without contradictions. Now, On this basis, it's possible in neurophony to recognize a feature class with 15 possible values. They are enumerated with the example of the relativizer on page 4, where you have an illustration of the inflectional paradigms of the nominals and pronouns in this language. The classes are designated by capital letters which evoke the phonological shape of the corresponding affixes and have a purely mnemonic justification. It might be confusing to use semantically motivated labels due to the high degree of semantic heterogeneity of most of the agreement classes of known forms. And in the present state of reconstruction of the Proto-Atlantic, it's impossible to propose a numbering system based on the same principle as that used for Bantu languages. The labeling of two classes calls for an additional comment. The classes labeled D and D plus ATR, as you can see in one, the form of the relativizer in class D is done or run. It's a free variation. And in class D plus ATR, the form of the relativizer is done or run, which I analyze as the consequence that the prefix of the class D plus ATR includes a floating ATR feature which surface is attached to the vowel. Okay, and this particularity of class inflection in Dolafoni has been a source of confusion in the previous analysis of Dolafoni. None of the pre-existing analysis analyzes the distinction between these two classes properly. Now, one on page 4 illustrates the full paradigm of the relativizer. You don't have 15 distinct forms, but just 14, since the forms for class B, K, and for class K coincide in this paradigm, but there are other paradigms which have distinct forms for these two classes, so it's not really a problem. And now, these paradigms fulfills meets my definition of class, in the sense of when the relative clause introduced by the relativizer modifies a noun, the value of this feature is determined by the noun form fulfilling the role of head, and conversely, each value of the feature class selects a subset of noun forms as the potential things of the relative clause. And at this point, we are dealing strictly with noun forms, not with lexemes, which means in particular that at this point, the singular and the plural of a given noun counts as two distinct forms, whose relationship will be considered later in the analysis. So, you have illustrations in two. You probably already noticed that one enumerates 15 values of the feature class, whereas only 11 of the classes are illustrated in 10. And well, precisely, this will be the particularity of the system I will analyze in the second part of my talk. Well, the same feature class with the same possible values and the same relationship with subsets of known forms as potential controllers characterizes, for example, the definite article suffixed to nouns. This can be seen already in two, since nouns are in the definite form. And the same feature characterizes various types of noun modifiers, adjectives, demonstratives, etc. Also the third person pronoun, the third person subject and non-subject indexes attached to verbs, and also a predicative word, or I call the ostensive, it's the equivalent of English here is, illustrated in three, where you can see that this predicative word agrees with its argument in the same way as the relativizer with the head noun, plus relative clause constructions. Now, as regards the division of noun forms into agreement classes, noun forms divide into subsets according to the value of the feature class they impose to the targets of the agreement mechanisms that they control. And of the 15 values of the feature class manifested in the inflection of the nominals and pronouns, 11, only 11, correspond in a non-marginal way to subsets of noun forms that are their potential controllers. Those are A, B, K, E, S, B, U, F, K, G, J, M, N. And this is these are precisely the values that were retained in 2 and 3 to illustrate the agreement mechanisms. For two other classes, T and D plus ATR, their involvement in agreement mechanisms controlled by nouns is very, very marginal. In principle, Jolofoni has noun forms that can act as the head or antecedent of a nominal or pronominal forms marked for one of these two classes. For example, ten or tan, place conceived as delimited in a precise way, may be found as the antecedent class t forms. There's also din or dun, place conceived as in interior, but these nouns are extremely rare in discourse. The corpus I've analyzed includes just one occurrence of din, two of dun, and no occurrence of din or dun at all. The forms are accepted by speakers in elicitations, but quite obviously they don't use them, or very rarely. And the remaining two classes, that is D and N, are never involved in agreement mechanisms controlled by nouns. They just have what I call context-free uses. And now, section 5, beginning on page 6, describes the relationship between the inflectional prefixes of nouns and the division of noun forms into agreement classes. Well, in 5.1, I give some details about the possible problems in the segmentation of noun forms as inflectional prefix plus term. Nothing particularly remarkable. Then in 5.2, you'll find an inventory of nominal prefixes and of their morphosyntactic properties, since some of them show similar allomorphy patterns, other are more or less special. It's not interesting to enter into the details, just if you are interested in the details of the Jolofoni system, you can have a look at it. We can go directly to section 5-8 on page 8. Noun prefixes, number of reviews and agreement. The relationship between the noun prefixes, the number of reviews and agreement. There's a small problem with some of the prefixes. It's not completely uncontroversial whether the way I identify the nominal prefix ka is the right one, but assuming that my analysis of the prefix ka is the right one, the relationship between noun prefixes and number values can be described as stated in the middle of page 8. There are prefixes which always express singular if they are found in noun forms that lend themselves to variation in number. Those are a, e, zero, f, k, b, ba, ny, and j. Then the prefixes book, k, s, o, and m, when found in forms that lend themselves to variation between singular and plural, always express plural. And now there are five prefixes, fa, ga, ma, te, and d plus atr, exclusively attested in nouns that do not lend themselves to number variation. As regards the relationship between noun prefixes, number values, and agreement classes, three prefixes raise a particular problem, zero, k, and s. Zero is found in two subsets of noun forms, a subset of singular forms belonging to the agreement class E, corresponding to plural forms marked with S, such as Gimukor, lion, plural, Sigimukor, and a subset of singular forms belonging to agreement class A, corresponding to plural forms in book or ke, for example, anbukan, human being, or inyai, kinyai, mother. Well, in the notation, I'll distinguish the 0-1 prefix from the 0-2 prefix, but it's just a notational convention to try to be as clear as possible. Now, the prefix k is shared by two subsets of nouns, a subset of plural forms belonging to agreement class BK, corresponding to singular forms marked with a, human nouns, and a subset of plural forms belonging to agreement class k, and corresponding to singulars marked with f, such as funak, dei, kunak. Here again, in the notation, I will distinguish K1 corresponding to the singular prefix A and K2 corresponding to the singular prefix F. As regards S, the general rule, with very few exceptions, is that plural forms in S correspond to singular forms in A or 0 belonging to agreement in both cases. To agreement class A, such as CN, DOCS, singular AN. But there are two exceptions to kinship terms, Sumpa, fathers, and Sinyai, mothers. The corresponding singular forms have the regular prefixes of human nouns, A or zero in the singular. and moreover, the plural of these two nouns may optionally be marked by k instead of s, sumpa, sumpa kumpa, sinyai kinyai, and as regards agreement, even when they show the prefix S, they may control BK, that is human plural agreement or S agreement. So, but all the other suffixes unequivocally determine the agreement class to which the noun forms they must belong. In 4, on page 9, you have you can find the systematic correspondence between nominal prefixes, agreement classes, and number values. And the prefixes are grouped according to the fact that they correspond to the same agreement patterns. As you can see here, there are two possible prefixes for nouns belonging to agreement class A, equally two possible prefixes for nouns belonging to class E, also for class F, also for class B, for class J, for class BK, and for class M. And the other classes, in the other agreement classes, all nouns share the same prefix. And as regards the number value, the chart in 4 reflects the fact that some of the prefixes never appear in nouns that have a distinction between a singular and a plural form. Now, the articulation between inflectional classes of nouns and genders being defined as subsets of nominal lexemes, not noun forms, nominal lexemes, that have the same agreement properties, both in the singular and in the plural. In 5, you have all the possible singular-plural pairings, taking into consideration both the prefixes of noun forms and the agreement class to which they belong. And as you can see, there are 14 possible pairings if you take into account both criteria, that is in number inflection and agreement. Now, in terms of genders, that is abstracting from morphology and considering agreement properties only, there are 9 genders enumerated on the bottom of page 10. And as you can see in 8, 3 out of the 9 genders, no, you cannot see it, but the following point is that 3 out of the 9 genders have a marginal status. The first one is gender A in the singular, class A in the singular, S or BK in the plural, with just 2 members, father and mother, which moreover show hesitation in their agreement properties in the plural. The second marginal gender is gender JK with 1 member only, GKI, and here there's a very simple explanation. GK was probably originally a diminutive form corresponding to plural mutil, but in the present state of phony, GK has lost its diminutive value, but in the singular only. And mukil, the regular plural corresponding to mukil, is still used as a diminutive. And this is the reason why this very marginal gender emerged. And the third marginal gender is the gender nye I am aware of only two nouns belonging to this gender, Niwoj Chay and Nikol Morning. To conclude, Jolafoni has six major or non-marginal genders. Three of them conflate two or three inflectional classes of nouns each, whereas the other three are morphologically homogeneous, that is, correspond to one and only one inflectional class only. As regards the content of the genders, gender JM can be designated as the diminutive gender, since most, not all, but most of the nouns found in this gender are semantically the diminutive of nouns found in other genders with the same stem, such as Anil, Kunil, Child, Jinil, Munil, Baby. Now, gender A, BK, can be designated as the human gender, since in Jolafoni, the coincidence between this grammatical gender and the semantic class of human nouns is almost perfect. Such a coincidence between a grammatical gender and the class of human nouns, I think, is not very common. But in phony, in fact, there are only two exceptions to this correspondence, the word for father and mother. Well, the major genders are recapitulated in 7. As you can see in 7, the distinction between genders B, U, and K, U is neutralized in the plural, both in terms of agreement classes and number prefixes. And the same agreement class, the same class K, expresses plural agreement in gender F, K, but singular agreement in gender K, U. Now, in 6.3, you have examples of nominal lexemes devoid of number contrast. Interestingly, in Jolafoni, such nouns can be found in all agreement classes and with all possible prefixes, with the only exception of the human class. So you have example, as you can see, you have notions such as collective nouns, or notions that have, such as fire. Interestingly, in Yolo languages, fire is treated as a plural utensil. It has the morphology and the agreement properties of that normally go with the plural value of the future number, but Sambon fire has no singular. So this is, and in fact, my impression, it's I didn't count them, but my impression is that the proportion of nouns outside the number contrast is particularly high in Jola languages. I think that Guillaume will agree with me.
Yes.
Yes. Thank you. Yes, but it's quite striking in comparison with other languages. Well, now, what constitutes, in fact, the main point of my presentation? It's in section 7, beginning on page 13, contextual and context-free uses of the feature class. Well, it's a phenomenon, I think, widespread across Niger Congo, perhaps. More important in Atlantic languages, in particular, you'll see very developed in Jolafoni, and it's very important to have the possibility of describing this aspect of the system without falling into confusions or contradictions. Thank you. to be quite precise on the terminology, and this is because of this phenomenon that I proposed a definition of the inflectional feature class of adnominals and pronouns, which of course mentions its involvement in agreement mechanisms with nominal controllers as essential, without, however, excluding the possibility that this inflectional category may also have other functions. Well, the notion of contextual use of class as an inflectional feature of the nominals and pronouns applies quite obviously to situations in which a form inflected for class agrees with a controller within the frame of a construction characterized by agreement between a controller and the target, for example, noun attribute with adjective or noun plus demonstrative determiner. It may also occur that the value of the feature class is interpreted as referring to a controller present in the context, but with which the form inflected for class does not have a particular syntactic relationship. It's still possible to recognize the contextual conditioning of the value expressed by the inflectional feature class in situations in which no potential controller is present in the context, but the context suggests an understood controller with reference to which it's possible to imagine a plausible interpretation of the value expressed by the feature class. And here you have some examples in which it's possible to recognize contextual use of the feature class in spite of the fact that no potential controller is physically present in the context. For example, in 9, you have a free relative, Banosan Banudian Beroke, any work that you are going to do, there's no head noun, and the relativizer and the distributive Banosan are in the class B form, and well, in the context from which I extracted this construction, there's no class B noun, but there is the verb work, and the corresponding noun is borok, work, belonging to class, precisely to class B, and in fact, if you add it as a head noun, borok banos and banugen beroke, it doesn't change anything in the interpretation. Similarly, in 10, fatika jom dikulain, and the following day they return there. The following day, literally, fati is a grammatical word used to introduce adnominal possessors. So that the literal meaning is that of tomorrow, they return there. That of tomorrow and that of is in the class F form, and here the obvious explanation, and any consultant will give immediately the explanation to you if you ask him, is that phonak day, which precisely belongs to this class, is understood. And here again, if you add phonak fatika diom dikuran, the meaning doesn't change. Interestingly, in 11 and 12, you have the same class F without any potential controller in the context, but from the context, you can immediately know that in 11 and 12, the understood controller is forim, that is word, speech, because well, in 11, for example, so-and-so have a love affair to the point that they are discussing a marriage project, and marriage project is expressed as fatibe buyebo, literally that of marriage. But the fact that this phrase is immediately preceded by Kosamken speak, makes obvious that you can reintroduce for infati buyebo, that is, words of toward marriage, literally, marriage project, in the same form. Well, to conclude on this point, the possibility of analyzing endonyms or pronouns invented for class as the targets of agreement with a noun in the role of controller is not limited to situations in which the controller and the target are in a particular type of syntactic relationship, or even in situations in which the controller is present in the context without having a particular type of syntactic relationship with the target. The controller may also be a noun which is not present at all, which the speaker decided to leave unexpressed since the context gives indications that make it possible to select it among the set of possible controllers. Now, it may also happen that you find words inflected for class in situation in which this explanation is not possible. There's no potential controller physically present in the context, and the context doesn't give any clue to select one of the potential controller rather than another, and nevertheless the speakers don't hesitate in interpreting the forms inflected for class, and this is what I call the context-free use of the feature class. For example, if we resume the forms of the relativizer that were enumerated at the beginning of my talk and are on the handout on page 3 now, or 3 or 4, but it's not important. Out of these 15 forms, 11 can be used in this way. 11 out of the 15 forms of the relativizer may have a context-free use, that is, a use in which, regardless of the context, the speakers analyze them as indicated in 13, I'm the person that, can the people that, yan the thing that, etc. And in example 14, 14a to 14k, you have examples of such free relatives which are interpreted as referring to person, thing, place, manner, time, without necessitating any reference to the context. And, well, these 11 values of the feature class are very productive in this kind of use, not only with the relativizer, but in general, with all words inflected for class. But there is a 12th value of the feature class, nya, which has this kind of use, but in more restricted conditions. Class nya has a context-free use with quantitative modifiers and with quantitative modifiers only, and in this context it can be used to express to refer to a number of repetitions, a given number of times. For example, in 15 you have the word nyamenge. Nyamenge is the class nye form of the participle from the verb man be numerous. So it means numerous plus the indication of class mien. There's no class mien known in the context that could explain this use. And it is interpreted as many times, although nothing in the context suggests reference to the idea of repetition in time. Okay? So that out of the 15 values of the featured class, only 3 do not lend themselves to context-free uses. And now the question that arises is to what extent what I call the context-free use of the inflectional feature class can be analyzed as a particular type of agreement with an understood control. This is a question I'm going to discuss now. The first idea that comes to mind to explain this phenomenon is in terms of ellipsis of a controller. Simply, the idea would be that most nouns can only, as agreement controllers, acting as agreement controllers, can only be elided if the context makes it possible to retrieve them. And there would be some particular nouns with the property that they could be elided without any condition on the context, and which consequently could be taken as default controllers when the context gives no clue about the possible controller. And there are among the values of the feature class that lend themselves to this use, some of them are compatible with this kind of explanation. In the first place, classes A and BK, since in their context-free use, the classes in question refer to human being in the singular, human beings in the plural, and precisely, this is the human gender, which include, among others, the generic term an, bukan, human being. So for these two values of the feature class, the context-free use is not problematic. It's not problematic either for class U, referring to thing in the absence of any controller suggested by the context. Class U is quite heterogeneous semantically, but it includes the noun waf, thing. And it's conceivable to posit a rule saying, in contrast to the other nouns belonging, noun forms belonging to this class, waf, acting as a controller, can be elided without any contextual conditioning, and from the point of view of the hearer, waf is selected as the default controller when a class U form occurs in a context which gives no clue to select the controller within the set of the nouns belonging to this agreement class. Now, there are several classes for which this type of explanation is excluded. For example, classes E and S can also refer to thing, the notion of thing in their context-free use, but gender ES include no noun whose meaning could be glossed as thing. Class M, which in its context-free use refers to manner. Well, in this agreement class, there are some nouns which, with meaning referring to the notion of manner, but not the majority. The majority of nouns referring to manner are in another agreement class. And there's what is crucial, class M includes no generic term with the meaning manner, which in fact does not exist. In your euphony, if you want to express the general concept of manner as a noun, you have to use the French borrowing façon, which is a quite common situation in the languages of this area. Now, class nye is very interesting because, as I mentioned, it's used, it has a context-free use with quantitative modifiers with reference to time in the sense of repetition, once, twice, many times, etc. A possible understood controller would be a noun with the meaning time. There is such a noun in Yolafoni, but unfortunately it doesn't belong to this gender, since it's bouillasse, probably from French voyage. I guess it's probably a borrowing. It has a variant caillasse, bouillasse, but nothing that could explain nye, the nye class on forms such as nya menge, often. And even more interesting, in its context-free use, class nye clearly implies plurality, whereas otherwise it's a singular class. I think this is a particularly interesting point. Now, classes D and N. D refers to thing, N refers to time. And here, there's no possibility of imagining synchronically, of course, hidden controller, since these two classes as values in the inflectional paradigm of a nominal and pronoun do not correspond to any agreement class of nouns. Now, there's a problem with the remaining classes, the locative classes, let's say, B, T, and D plus ATR. In their context-free use, they express the notion of place. In the case of class B, place delimited in a relatively vague way. T, place delimited in a relatively precise way. And D plus ATR, place viewed as an interior. Now, class B, in addition to its context-free use, it's used to express agreement with nouns belonging to various semantic types. This agreement class is semantically heterogeneous, whereas classes T and D plus ATR can only mark agreement with noun forms whose meaning is identical to that expressed by the class in its context-free use. And I think that this is a problem. The problem is that the noun forms that could be analyzed as understood controllers in the context-free use of the locative classes, that is bin or ban for class B, tin or tan for class T, and din or dun for class D plus ATR, are extremely rare in discourse. My analysis is based on a big corpus of naturalistic texts, and believe me, some of these nouns, although accepted in elicitation, never appear in text, and the only ones that appear have a very, very low frequency. And I'm not sure that all speakers use them. And there is another noun with the meaning place. It's a borrowing, it's a lula from Maninka. But it's extremely rare to be interesting. In fact, as surprising as this may seem to speakers of European languages, it's obvious that the use of the noun form to encode the notion of place is something quite exceptional in Yolafoni. And the expression of place mainly relies on the use, on the context-free use of classes. And this makes very unsatisfactory, in my opinion, the analysis according to which the ellipsis of a control noun would be responsible for the context-free use of these classes. Okay. Now, as regards possible, I think I have seen perhaps 5 minutes.
Yes.
Yeah.
So it will be more than enough.
Okay.
Just as regards a plausible historical scenario, well, a plausible explanation is that originally the context-free use of classes referred in all cases to an understood controller, but later, due to the evolution of the lexicon, the noun in question disappeared for some classes, but the possibility of a context-free use of the class with reference to the notion previously expressed by this noun was maintained. In other words, according to this hypothesis, the renewal of the lexicon is a plausible cause of the emergence of this kind of situation. And in this perspective, the case of the context-free use of class ingen with reference to a number of times is particularly interesting because of the contradiction between the plural value this class implies in its context-free use and its singular value when it expresses agreement with nouns. Most probably, at the time when the context-free use of this class grammaticalized, this was a plural class, probably. Later, the plural noun form that was initially responsible for this use of class near disappeared, and for some reasons, class near, which besides corresponds to an agreement class with very few nouns, was reanalyzed as a singular class. However, well, this is rather speculative, and further investigation would be necessary in order to determine to what extent cognates of the ghost controllers involved in the context-free use of classes could be identifiable in the other Atlantic languages. If such nouns cannot be traced back, this hypothesis is condemned to remain purely speculative. And there's a further complication, at least in the case of the locative classes and also of gender ABK, the fact that the stem of the noun forms that express the same meaning as the classes in question in their context we use is what I would like to call a chameleon stem in dolophony an or in. That is a stem that seems to act as a mere support for a prefix which entirely determines the meaning of the noun form, which suggests that historically the forms in question, that is, the forms based on such a chameleon stem, might have been originally rather a nominal or pronominal form in for class, which were later reanalyzed as nouns. Well, this is at least a possible scenario. And for example, I think that the coincidence between the chameleon noun stem an and the relativizer an is probably not accidental. You have, for example, in Wolof, which belongs to a very distant branch of Atlantic, a stem an, which is the interrogative determiner, which all these points to rather a nominal or pronominal origin of these chameleon stems. And the problem is that this hypothesis pushes even further the search for nominal lexemes whose ellipses may have resulted in the context-free use of classes. And of course, systematic compilation of comparative data, which I was not in a position to do, would be necessary to advance towards solving this problem. One, I think I can stop here to have some minutes for questions. Thank you for your attention.
Well, there are many interesting things to discuss and to ask, but I'll take up your last hypothesis on the chameleon stem. If you look at the Banjo, for instance, I think there the etymological relation of your type of chameleon stem, at least in some languages, is pretty clear. It is the old word for person.
Okay.
So in Swahili, Shona, it's
Mtu,
it's the reconstruction of person, and that expanded actually as a chameleon stem into other classes.
It's
yes.
Expanding from person and not the other way around.
No, I don't want to say your hypothesis is not possible, but at least in some cases where you have your chameleon stem, the etymology is pretty clear. It's a generalization of the human noun.
Yes, but what is the evidence that it's a generalization?
In Shona, in Swahili, I think there are several languages where it's the reconstructed term for person, which expanded into the default classes for 7, 8 locative classes.
Yes, but many Bantuists don't agree that two was reconstructed as a stem with the meaning of person.
It functions like its default stem in Jack's presentation.
Well, okay, then I say something from a wider perspective. In Niger Congo, the term, the proto-Bantu term, Ntu, is cognate with nit and nt in many Niger Congo languages, and there it's person, unless you reconstruct to Niger Congo like a chameleon. And I think.
It is true that if we try to reconstruct a root for person in Atlantic, maybe it will be exactly what you see in Wolof, like Kanlan. In the same, maybe it's the same root.
Yes, but the coincidence between Jordan and Wolof doesn't imply that this must be reconstructed as a noun. It could be. It could be with the other scenario, that is the specialization of a form inflected for class as a noun. In the case of, I agree that the coincidence between the Bantu reconstruction as nit is a strong argument for the scenario you described.
Yeah, well, as I said, I didn't want to exclude your scenario.
But
at all.
In the case of Atlantic, I don't know of any evidence that this should be the case too. I think this should be a subject of future investigation.
Mm-hmm.
In any case, it would be interesting to systematically, perhaps with the help of Reflex, look systematically for possible for nouns which could possibly be the origin of the development of this uses of classes, and this could provide, I think, interesting insights in the evolution of the system. Here I just tried to give a synchronic account of the phenomenon insisting on the necessity to be very clear and precise with definitions and to things like that to describe it, but of course it's just
some other question, otherwise I would.
I'm not sure you really, I mean, that this is the only option, the ellipsis or controller, because these are the only possibilities. If you have in cases in many Niger-Congo languages, when you have, for instance, trees, names of trees are formed with a certain prefix, class prefix, or names of fruits are formed with a certain class prefix. So, and it's not necessarily, it doesn't mean that there was a controller somewhere in the context, or if you imagine that the source originally is kind of a classifier system, then that maybe was just the classifier that had this meaning. So there is no controller, so there's not a ellipsis and not a controller, so it's a kind of third possibility.
Yes, of course. Yes. I agree. Yes, as I told you, it's the first idea that comes to mind, but I'm open to any suggestions. And this is certainly a good one.
Well, in that case, it occurred to me, also, would there be another possibility that synchronically speakers recognize a certain
general
core meaning, a general meaning of a class due to a composite of nouns which converge on that meaning, and that's how they extract the meaning. So, for instance, the mana class in Swahili and other Bantu languages, you can only think it's a kind of composite, what many nouns go into that class, and then you get out the mana meaning.
This doesn't work for Durafuni.
Yeah.
Derived nouns with the meaning class, with the meaning mana, belong to a women class B, not M.
Yeah. Well, in Swahili, actually, there is only, it's jinsi, right?
Yeah.
Jinsi ni navyo fan, actually, the agreement is actually with the mana class, but the noun is, what class is it? So it's
yes.
similar, I mean.
Yes.
Okay, more comments or questions? Well then, thanks again.
No, actually,
no, you haven't changed.
There is a surprise.
Okay, hello.